Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everybody, to Positively Trek, what I like to think of as your positive little corner of Star Trek on the internet that seeks to have conversations of a positive nature rather than calling out everything as doom and gloom and saying how horrible everything is. And I feel like we need that these days. So I'm Dan Gunther. With me, of course, is Barry DeFord. Barry, how's it going?
It's going really well. And just hearing your kind of beginning there, I almost feel there's the seeds of like a captain's initial address at the beginning of a show, you know, like these are the voyages of the Positive Trek podcast. It's continuing mission to seek out good things to talk about, even though sometimes things can get a little bit heavy. We always try to end off with on a positive note or something along those lines. Anyway, I've lost the plot on that, but get some of that kind of airy-fairy music in the background, and I think you got yourself a nice intro.
I think so, too. I like the idea. I like Positively Trek. I like what we stand for, and I would love to come up with kind of a mission statement, for lack of a better term, or a sort of more than a motto, maybe less than a mission statement, somewhere in the middle there. That kind of summarizes what we're about. But yeah, I just kind of crystallize that a little bit in the minds of the listeners and us hosts as well. So
I remember a really long time ago when you actually pitched the idea of this podcast to me, which was a very long time ago now that I think about it. But I almost thought you had one at the time. Like there was sort of like a real sort of solid pitchy kind of quality to it. But also I think the fact that you've kind of left it open to some degree does help, especially when you get folks like me in here, and sometimes I can't help but throw that that Politrek's pedigree into some of the stuff we talk about and get all political on you. But that's for an episode later on.
Yeah. And I think we've had this conversation a bit before too, where I think positive can, it doesn't need to mean bubbly and effusive and happy all the time. It does also mean making positive change to get us to that Star Trek future, and maybe commenting on some of the areas where that doesn't meet that standard, I guess.
That's a good point.
Anyway, all of that is for another episode, because this episode, I was trying to think of a topic to talk about this week, and I'm just going to lay it all out there. I was thinking about current events. I was thinking about we're having a lot of wildfires up here in Canada and some terrible things happening very close to home and terrible things happening worldwide, not so close to home. But when you're on a world as small as ours, it doesn't really matter how far it is. It's all home, right? And I thought, you know what? No. We're going to save that for another time. We're going to have just a light, airy conversation this week. And so I'm proposing that we talk about what actors we would like to see in Star Trek, actors and actresses and all that sort of thing, that we would like to see appear in Star Trek who haven't done so before.
Uh-oh. I've got a problem.
Uh-oh.
This is problematic. I actually have returned characters. I've not done my homework correctly.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I'm talking about actors that I want to see come back.
That's okay too. That's fine.
Oh no.
Yeah, we can have a bit of a hybrid discussion.
Excellent. And you know what? I can probably throw some out there as well. No, I totally just got into who do I want to see come back again. And I know like that happens a lot in Star Trek, and we've done that a lot. Like Star Trek has done that a lot, but where I'm like, I just don't think their story is over and it would be great to see them do something again. But I can work around that as well. There's actually, I have a little catalog in my head of actors that I do think should be in Star Trek, or at least should grace the world of Star Trek. So you're getting double duty for me now.
Well, that's okay. That's good, because actually kind of how I wanted to lead into this discussion a little bit is with a bit of a talk about kind of some of the surprise actors in recent years that have made an appearance in Star Trek. So I'm thinking like my list for this a few years ago has a lot of names on it that have since appeared in Star Trek, which kind of blows my mind a little bit. One that was on my list quite a while ago was actually Shore Agadashlu, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, but people may know her as Avasarala in The Expanse. She's also played a number of different roles. And then, yeah, she just shows up in Star Trek Beyond as Commodore Paris on Yorktown Station. So that was a great one where I'm like, oh, I guess I can cross her off my list. Benedict Cumberbatch, again, with the Kelvin timeline, someone that I loved in Sherlock and thought, oh, it'd be great to see him on Star Trek. Not necessarily the role I expected him to play in Star Trek, but hey, he appeared there. And then one that's been on my list for a long time, just to lead us into this, we haven't seen him yet, but Paul Giamatti, I've always wanted to see in Star Trek, and now he's going to be in Starfleet Academy. Like, that blows my flipping mind that we have Paul Giamatti coming into Star Trek soon.
You're just able to call it, it seems.
Yeah, apparently.
That is actually really impressive. I forgot. I continuously forget that Paul Giamatti is coming to Star Trek. I think that is a good addition.
Definitely. And then one that was like way out there and I wasn't even on my list, but should have been on my list, was Tig Notaro. I had no idea that she would ever show up in Star Trek. And we're so blessed to have her in Star Trek. So I'm wondering, you said you kind of put together a list of people who have been on Star Trek that you'd like to see return.
Yes.
What's kind of one of your top names on that list? Because I'm curious about this now. I'm kind of digging this idea of a hybrid discussion, who to bring back and who to bring brand new.
Yeah, well, I would have to say that of the one that I would like to see come back the most, because I think he kind of got done dirty a little bit, is John Del Arco. I really felt like there was going to be more with him being Hugh, and he has been in some like really good drama pieces, some Spanish language stuff. Like, his career has kept on going, and I feel like he's aged like fine wine in a lot of ways. He's a very, you know, he can play a really kind of gritty character. I mean, Hugh's gone, and I don't necessarily, I mean, there's such thing as Star Trek dead in that respect, but I just think like he could come back. John Del Arco did actually play, obviously, Phantom, I believe was his name.
Fantome,
yeah, that was the one, back in Voyager. But he also played Miguel Pedro Diaz in Star Trek Bridge Commander in the early 2000s.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So, I mean, he could reprise that role, potentially. I think that would be kind of worth it, where he could come in, you know, maybe with an axe to grind, maybe not necessarily like a badmiral type, but something along the lines of, especially with Starfleet Academy, he could maybe be something of a, like a sage helper for some of the new people. You know, he's been in the game for a while or something like that. I think that would be an interesting way to kind of pull him back into Star Trek and give him something that can last a little bit longer. I think he's always held a special place in a lot of Star Trek fans' hearts. And if we can't have Hugh, at the very least, I'd like to have John Del Arco back. That's sort of my first kind of opener in terms of actors who have already been in Star Trek. But I would say that, to kind of tie that over, because I do have a working list in my head, I just opened up a list of Star Trek actors or people who I like as actors. Cillian Murphy, I think, would be cool.
Good call.
I would like to see Cillian Murphy specifically as a doctor character. I know he was Oppenheimer recently, but more kind of in the vein of what if the Scarecrow was actually a good guy kind of thing. I really liked his portrayal as the Scarecrow. I've liked him in a lot of stuff, to be honest with you. But no, he's always been someone who I think would do well in the Star Trek universe. I think he approaches characters really, really well, being very rounded, having a lot of quirks. I think he could get stuck in pretty well. I mean, he's a very high-end actor. He's a very sought-after actor. There's no way I think we could get him. Mind you, we got Michelle Yeoh back, so we can pull some pretty gourmet talent out there.
Yeah. Holly Hunter. I mean, right? You know, maybe not quite at the career point that Cillian Murphy is, but that's a pretty big get.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what I like about Cillian Murphy too, especially in some kind of doctor role, is those eyes, right? He can really emote well. And I think the other good part about it is it seems he's extremely disconnected. It's become very apparent to me that he doesn't have a lot of social media activity, if anything at all. I don't even think he has an account. I think he spends more time with his family, and I don't know really how much he even knows about Star Trek itself. So him kind of coming in raw with such strong acting talent, he could really, really be a part of something very character driven, I think. And I just would love to see Cillian Murphy. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
that's a good one.
That's my first one.
I really like that. It's funny you mention his eyes, because as soon as you say Cillian Murphy, that's what I see is those eyes of his, right? That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so.
My opening salvo for an actor who's not been on Star Trek before, who I would like to see is maybe an easy kind of lob here, but you know, let's bring Sir Ian McKellen in and have him share scenes with Sir Patrick Stewart, because come on, right?
Yeah,
come
on. Yeah. They're such super friends anyways. It lends itself, doesn't it?
It really does. Sir Ian McKellen, first of all, is just an incredible actor. Everything I've seen him in, whether it's, you know, of course, Lord of the Rings, the X-Men movies, any of the stage work he's done, to even, you know, his guest spot on Extras.
I was just thinking that.
He's playing himself.
Sir Ian, trying Sir to Ian, teach somebody. Sir Ian, Sir Ian. Wizard!
They say, action, you shall not pass. And I'm Gandalf. They say cut, and I'm Sir Ian. So you see how it works, right?
Oh, that one, and then Ricky Gervais's encounter with Sir Pat is also amazing, when he's like, and I'll make it so, and like, it's clear that Ricky Gervais doesn't know, and he's like, you didn't watch Star Trek as a young man? He's like, no. And he's like, good Lord.
Sir Ian McKellen and Sir Patrick Stewart on screen together, like, if we're gonna bring Patrick Stewart back again one last time, as he kind of wants to do, I haven't heard anything on that lately, so I don't know if that'll ever happen, but if it does, hey, have him bring a friend, come on.
Absolutely. One last thing I wanted to say about Sir Ian and like him and Sir Pat working together was they were actually in a West End show in London when I was living there. I believe it was Waiting for Godot. And I didn't get to see it, but Sir Pat and Sir Ian actually would like walk around near Trafalgar Square in their little hats, and they would be cooing and just having fun and cajoling one another and dancing around park benches and stuff. And apparently it was a real sight to be seen.
Yeah, they did a full day of that in New York City doing that. It's incredible. He talks a bit about it in Sir Patrick does in his autobiography. And yeah, the social media aspect of it was fun.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I never managed to see them or it. I met Michael Gambon when I was there, so I met a different kind of wizard. Anyways, So whose turn is it? Am I up next?
You are up next.
Ooh, okay. So first of all, one of my favorite actors in Hollywood of all time, and it has everything to do with just her acumen as an actor, is Amy Adams. And I would love to see Amy Adams in a role. She's no stranger to sci-fi, fantasy kind of stuff, right? She was in Enchanted, and she was Lois Lane in Superman, so she can do that out there stuff. But I would like to see her actually recast as Janeway.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
She doesn't do quite the same bravado hands on the hips thing. I think she would be a bit of a Kelvin timeline Janeway to some degree. I think she could do that same set a course for home, that same kind of feel that I think she could do that, or make her just some kind of strong, intentional captain who maybe has to sacrifice herself for her crew. I could see her taking on a role like that. I really loved her in Arrival, the brooding kind of person who's experienced something beyond what their comprehension can completely take. And I think she did such a fantastic job. And actually, my favorite performance by her was actually in a lesser-known movie, but still good, called The Fighter. She played the girlfriend of Mark Wahlberg, who was a boxer, and Christian Bale was in it. They were also in, she and Christian Bale were also in American Hustle, which was good as well. But The Fighter is actually one of my all-time favorite movies. And I would like to see her in there, mainly again because I think she can really carry a character extremely well, and she can really give you a lot of depth and a lot of just that strong performance. And to give her a role where maybe she has to be someone who has to sacrifice themselves, I think she could really pull at the heartstrings well. I don't know if she lends herself as well. I don't know. She was good in Enchanted when she was comedic, but no, I'd like to see her, you know, maybe like a Dominion War captain or something like that.
Interesting. That's cool. I like that. The Enchanted movies now, I guess. My wife, Nikki, recently introduced them to me because I hadn't watched them before. And they're delightful and she's great in it. And I had, of course, seen Arrival when it came out in the theater. And it's an incredible film. And she's an incredible part of that film. So
yeah.
Great choice. Yeah.
The Star Trek return that I would want to see, and actually maybe even have them on the same bridge together, would be Linda Park. Hoshi Sato.
Okay.
I really loved her kind of discovery sort of feel, right? And maybe I'm kind of building her into the Discovery era when she gets mentioned in Strange New Worlds and those old scientists, and how like Uhura wrote a lot about her and stuff like that. I feel like there could be more to be done with her in terms of her xenolinguistics. Also, she is like replicated or something in the comic book series, if I remember, as an Andorian.
Yes, there's a many generations removed offspring.
Yeah, yeah.
Lily Sato is an Andorian, mostly Andorian, but obviously part human somewhere along the line. Ancestor there, yeah.
That's amusing. So yeah, I think I would love to see Linda Park and Amy Adams on the same set together, to be honest. I think they would bounce off each other pretty well.
That would be really cool. Yeah. Awesome. Well, my next pick for a newcomer to Star Trek is maybe a little bit out of left field. This is an actor we haven't seen, or at least I haven't seen for some time, but a little bit of history here. When Star Trek Discovery was first announced in 2017, and they released kind of the casting call, right? Like the people they were looking for. Based on the description and like characteristics and on all of that of Michael Burnham, I was convinced that this actor was about to be cast in Star Trek Discovery. At the time, my to-be wife at the time and I were watching Orange is the New Black, and Samira Wiley was an actor on that show. She played the role of Poussey Washington in the first few seasons of that show. And that season before Discovery was about to go before the camera, her character was killed off. And I thought, I was like, aha, I've put two and two together here. This is going to be our Michael Burnham. Instead, Sonequa Martin-Green was cast, and wonderfully cast. She's terrific and a terrific addition to Star Trek. But I've always kind of wondered what Samira Wiley would be like in Star Trek. Now, I don't know how many people remember that her character on the show, but she was a very small diminutive black woman with short hair, like almost shaved head, very, very short hair. She was the main friend of Tasty for the first couple seasons.
Goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful actor. She showed up after that in The Handmaid's Tale in the role of Moira, who is like the best friend of the main character. And I see she's made a few appearances on a few other things since then, up to 2022. So not a lot of stuff that I'm familiar with, but she, I think, would be a wonderful addition to Star Trek. And I think it'd be really cool to see her on the show somewhere doing something.
I like it. I like that a lot. And again, you know, you've got a lot of dimensions, right? Obviously, I think Sinequa Martin-Green really did carry the ensemble very well. And I do credit her quite a bit, despite the writers kind of jerking the show in a lot of directions, that Sinequa Martin-Green was able to kind of glue all the pieces together really well. I will actually give her direct credit for that.
Yeah, absolutely. She's kind of when you start to learn about a lot of the behind the scenes turnover and stuff, she's kind of the anchor that pulled everything through by the sounds of it. So
kind of like Michael Burnham. Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
Sinequa Martin-Green as Sinequa Martin-Green in Star Trek.
Exactly.
The writing fiasco that managed to land the plane.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if I can piggyback on that, I guess, and I'm just kind of trying to think like, okay, bringing back older Star Trek actors. This is another person who showed up on Star Trek and surprised me at the time. I did not expect to see this person on Star Trek. And even in retrospect, I'm sometimes like, she was in Star Trek? That's wild. Kind of in the same vein as Tig Notaro a little bit. Mm-hmm. Sarah Silverman as Rain Robinson in Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, yeah.
I would not mind seeing that character back somehow. Like, it was 1996 that we saw her. So, you know, if they do a time travel back in time to now, she would be as old as she is now. So, yeah, another time travel adventure. And Rain Robinson is like, wait a minute. I know where you're from.
That would be amusing. I do think comedians do sci-fi well overall, for the most part. So no, I think that would be a useful usage of a character who's been somewhat mothballed, to build on bringing an actor back that I would like, and actually kind of tying my little pieces together, because now the gerbil's really running in the wheels in my head right now, is bring back John Billingsley as his Denobulan Dr. Phlox. But then bring back, rather than one of his three wives, one of his wives' husbands come in, and then they have to do things together, and the other husband would be played by Tim Roth.
Ooh, I thought you were going to go in a different direction, but I like that. That's cool.
Yeah, and maybe even they find love. I don't know. Like, we can see what happens in that respect. But again, you know, Tim Roth is one who could actually play a complicated actor. I mean, Andy Serkis gets a lot of the credit for being a kind of, you know, lots and lots of done up sort of look character actor. But Tim Roth in Planet of the Apes was absolutely terrifying. But also he moved like a chimp. Like, he was very good. He had those little twitches and ticks that he had. Like, he did a fantastic job. So I think that would be kind of neat to get him in Denobulan makeup. Maybe, like, you know, do something puffed up and whatnot. But I think, yeah, he would do a pretty interesting job playing with John Billingsley. I think they would do well playing off of one another.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to KundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Positively Trek is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. A special thank you to our Constitution class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Mirren, and Paul D. Kinnear. To help out with the podcast, visit patreon.com/positivelytrek, where for a small monthly donation, you can get early access to ad-free episodes, shoutouts, exclusive content, associate producer credits, and more. Thank you so much for listening, and live long and prosper. I've got one that might be another kind of gimme, I guess, a little bit, because one of my favorite things is when a fairly well-known actor comes out and says they love Star Trek and really want to do Star Trek, and boy, they hope they do Star Trek, which is, I'm sure, how Paul Giamatti ended up on Star Trek, because he made no secret of that.
He's a man of taste.
Exactly. So another actor who has done that in the past, and who, it actually turns out, a news story a little while ago, she might have actually been offered a role but was unable to do it because of prior commitments. Rosario Dawson.
Really?
Yeah, she is a huge Trekkie and has always said that she really wants to be on Star Trek. And apparently, there's a little article came out just a few weeks ago about how she just mentioned at a Comic-Con that she was maybe going to play a changeling, one of Odo's people. But not unfortunately, it's huge for her career and awesome. She was committed to Ahsoka at the time. Closest I can think, she wouldn't have shown up in Picard with the changelings there, but there was that one episode of Discovery with the changeling who was cheating at the gambling place.
Oh, yeah.
I have a feeling that that was supposed to be a bigger role and it was going to be her, but she said she really wants to play a Q because, like, who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't want to be the agent of chaos that is a Q? Come on.
Right? But yeah, I think Rosario Dawson, just for her enthusiasm, I would love to see her on Star Trek because, you know, why not give the space to somebody who really wants to be there? And she really wants to be there. Yeah. So
I also like your pun, give the space, Star Trek. Anyway, that was bad. All right, I've got a pitch, and actually I've built on this pitch since we started this, and I realized I didn't do my homework correctly. So the pitch originally was basically how I believe it was season one of Picard sort of ended with the synths and them kind of being all on the ship together, and maybe they're going to go on adventures. So bring that back, right? So throw Issa Briones as Soji, Santiago Cabrera as Rios back on the La Sirenia, and throw Ivan Ivagora as Elnor on there as sort of a comic relief, right? So you've got the Romulan connection with Issa, with Soji and Elnor. You've got the kind of devil-may-care, swashbuckling grump of Rios getting annoyed by Elnor, and then obviously Rios and Soji have a bit of a history with each other, and we can kind of take that for wherever it goes. And basically, in a very kind of 80s fantasy sci-fi, have them on episodic adventures. Really bring it back to just disconnected episodic adventures where they go and, you know, do something else. But there will be sort of that solid kind of, there is still something that it builds to ultimately. So the best analog I can give you is the way Sailor Moon kind of worked. You can watch the episodes relatively out of order and still get the story and get the plot. But there is always those bad guys kind of plotting in the distance, you know, kind of getting closer and closer. And have it a synth who's the bad guy played by Carrie Ann Moss from The Matrix. I think she lends herself very well to looking semi like AI anyways. I think she can kind of play that kind of character. And I think she would do really well in a villain role.
Oh, absolutely.
In that respect. I think that would be really cool to get her and maybe even make her a Romulan synth. I don't know, whatever.
She would do a really good Romulan.
Yeah, I was kind of torn. Make her a Romulan, then make it a twist that she's a synth at the end.
Carrie Ann Moss as a Romulan. I think like that just has my wheels turning. That's awesome. In much the same way, and she wasn't on my list, but after, you know, the later seasons of Game of Thrones, Lena Headey as a Romulan, I thought that short, severe haircut she had as Cersei for a couple of those seasons, I was like, oh, she's just a Romulan. Like, she's absolutely a Romulan. There's a real opportunity for some like badass Romulan women. And I think Carrie Ann Moss is very near the top of that list. That's awesome.
Yeah. Even have her like get into a fight and she can even do her like Matrix jump.
Oh, totally.
just we're throwing pickles at the wall here. So it doesn't matter. I can go wherever I want to go to see, I guess, pickles at the wall to see what sticks. I need to finish the analogy because not everyone knows what that means. Anyways. But yeah, the idea is kind of make it an ensemble cast where they go on adventures. Maybe they've got some like a talisman that they're looking for, kind of Lord of the Rings style. Maybe not quite as broody as some of the Picard level stuff was with those characters, but ultimately give them some kind of task that they have to get to and make them have enough conflict between each other to make it interesting, bit of comic relief. And I do think that these characters specifically, I don't know if they were all as well received in the Star Trek universe as much. Frankly, cast aside, I really don't think they did enough with Soji. I feel like they could have done more. They really hyped her up at the beginning, her and her sister. And I think Issa Briones is an extremely good actor who is worth a series. She's worth her own series. She could carry that series. And then Santiago Cabrera, like, he acted in one of my favorite movies of all time, Che the Revolutionary. He played Camilo Cienfuegos, who was one of the leaders of the Cuban Revolution. Has a very unfortunate end in actual history. You don't see that in the movie. And the movie is somewhat problematic, but his portrayal of Camilo Cienfuegos, I think, was absolutely spot on. So I think he can just play that kind of swashbuckling, devil-may-care kind of dude. And then, yeah, we didn't really get a lot or enough of Elnor either. I think there could be more, maybe give him a different context, and he could fit into a story a lot better, especially if he's getting chased around by someone like Carrie Ann Moss.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved Elnor. I loved all of those characters, actually, but Elnor, I always felt he got done a little dirty.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in season two, where he was kind of sidelined for most of the season. And then, of course, he was in that group that didn't come back for season three, which was always unfortunate to me.
100%. So. 100%. Kind of forgotten about.
Well, my next actor who's not been in Star Trek before that I would love to have make an appearance, and this kind of came out of my thinking about Rosario Dawson, is another import from the Star Wars universe, among many other things, and that would be Giancarlo Esposito, I think, would be incredible to bring into Star Trek. People may know him from any number of things. I think the first time he really got on my radar was, of course, Breaking Bad, where he played the horrible villain in that. And then in The Mandalorian, of course, another horrible villain in that. And then The Boys, another horrible villain. So my pitch for Giancarlo Esposito in Star Trek is maybe not a villain. Let's change things up a bit. Let's make him, how about a hard-nosed academy instructor in Starfleet Academy?
Yeah.
I bet you he'd be a really, you know, almost like, I can't think of a character archetype, but, you know, one of those strict teachers that you come to know as actually very much caring for his students and wanting them to succeed. So I think he would be an incredible addition.
But played off as kind of a dick at the start. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
But actually very, very deep feeling and wanting to be good to his, his students and stuff. No, I get you there. That would be really good.
The kind of instructor that like the seasoned captain would return to decades later and recognize what he did for him.
So I had a question about the concept of recasting, and honestly, I definitely fit or fall a lot more on just recast them. It's okay. They don't have to be the original actor, living or dead. It's fine, right? But I thought to myself, what about McCoy? What about Dr. McCoy? Bringing Dr. McCoy back for something, but going the Grand Moff Tarkin route like they did in Star Wars, where they basically AI'd his face onto a different actor and had him played, you know, looking like the original actor. I forget his name, but Grand Moff Tarkin looked like Grand Moff Tarkin, a little bit computer brushed, but, you know, we're getting better at that every day, it seems. What do you think about that possibility of, like, say we were to bring an iconic character like Dr. McCoy back and had him played by an actor, but having the face be redone to be uncannily like DeForest Kelly's?
I mean, I'm kind of like the opinion that you expressed earlier, which is like, just recast them, it's fine.
Yeah,
I don't know. For something like Rogue One, I was 100% behind the decision they made there, because it just is so directly a part of that story. So yeah, and I don't know. I'm not sure who, because you don't end up seeing their face anyway.
Well, right? Andy Serkis, obviously. He does that all. I'm just kidding.
Well, yeah. There you go. But yeah. Oh, Andy Serkis in Star Trek. My goodness.
Actually, that would be pretty cool. Yeah. He could play a lot of stuff.
That would be great.
I just think to myself, like, redoing him worked in the reboots. Absolutely. Or in, not in the reboots, but in the JJ verse.
In the count. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. I just thought to myself, like, who's a Star Trek actor whose face is just, to some degree for me, irreplaceable? And DeForest Kelly was the first one that came to mind. I just, the way he looked, the way he would emote, even into the movies later on, like, you can't beat his portrayal. Like, I really do have to say, it's very authentic. And yeah, I mean, you know, he's gone and that's that. And if you ever want to watch DeForest Kelly, you can just go watch him on the original series or the movies. But yeah, no, there was just something about his character that would lend itself to, like, well, if we wanted that face back, we could technically do it now. And would we want that? Again, maybe we're just sort of letting the conversation float away. Cause I think, yeah, you and I are both very much like, no, there are other talented actors out there who can reimagine the character to some degree. Like, the new Uhura is fantastic. I have no qualms with her whatsoever. I think she's doing an extremely stellar job. May Nichelle Nichols rest in peace and her memory be a blessing. But honestly, I don't have a problem with that. I think Kirk's reiterations over time have been fantastic. Heck, who knows? Maybe one day they'll even recast Worf when we're pensioners. You know, who knows?
Well, Star Trek is the story of Worf.
Truly. So.
No, I see what you're saying about DeForest Kelly as McCoy. And it's funny because, yeah, I see where you're coming from, where that performance and that look was so integral to that character. And it's funny that, to me, Carl Urban was the absolute best recasting of the Kelvin timeline films as well. Like, I think his McCoy is so good, because on the one hand, I absolutely agree that DeForest Kelly is irreplaceable, but out of all of the people who replaced people in the Kelvin timeline, Carl Urban did the best job as McCoy.
See, I would disagree. I think he did a good job. I actually think Chris Pine did the best Kirk.
Fair enough. But it's just funny how I can hold these kind of disparate thoughts in my head at the same time. But yeah, Chris Pine, yeah, respectfully disagree. Like, I think he did great, but like, Carl Urban's McCoy just blew me away.
Yeah. Green-blooded hobgoblin. So the jury's out, and I would be interested to know what people think about the concept of AI casting versus simply recasting, and where we are as a fandom. I think I already know, but it's nice to be reassured.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I do have a couple more actors that I'd love to see brought onto Star Trek. And like one of my earlier responses, they're both kind of maybe left field ones that are a little bit out there. But I'm a huge fan of the television show Reservation Dogs. And I feel like there are a number of actors on that show that I would love to see come over to Star Trek. A couple of actors floated to the top of the list for me. And on the top of that list is Devery Jacobs, who played Alora Dannon in Reservation Dogs, not in Willow. Long story, watch the show.
Okay.
I'll talk about her a little bit. Everything I've seen her in, I just love her in. She's just got one of those faces that you latch onto. Like, I notice on whatever streaming service it was that showed Reservation Dogs here, I think it was Disney Plus, whenever I clicked into the show, the like main banner picture they had was kind of a close up of her looking into the distance.
Oh yeah.
And I just like, her face draws you in and you're just like, there's a story behind that face. And I want to know more. And she's so good in that show. And the few other things I've seen her in as well. So, she was my top pick from Reservation Dogs. My second pick from Reservation Dogs, and they could be, I could see them go together, Zahn McClarnon, which I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but he played Big, the police light horseman guy in Reservation Dogs.
Oh, yeah.
I loved him. I loved him in that show. I would love to see him. I don't know. I could see him be a Starfleet Admiral or... I don't know, somebody.
And keep his braids?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I've seen him in a couple other things too since then. The Marvel series Echo. He was in there along with Devery Jacobs actually as well. I loved him so much in Reservation Dogs. And then anytime I've seen him, I'm just so happy to see him on screen.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, and I think that really opens up a major opportunity because I think the area where the Star Trek franchise has faltered the most is portrayal, accurate, honest, and good portrayal of indigenous characters, indigenous actors, indigenous storylines with backgrounds that actually make sense. Actually, I would say for me, the strongest depiction of indigeneity in Star Trek is in the animated series How Sharp a Serpent's Tooth. That would be the only one. So I think that actually would really open things up quite a bit in terms of how indigeneity doesn't go away in the 24th or, you know, whichever century they throw it in. It's always going to exist. And if you think about how long colonization has taken place, I do think they'll still be reckoning with certain aspects of it, even into the era of Starfleet, especially considering the fact that, you know, they're colonizing other planets and whatnot. So I think that's a really good addition. When we think about how Star Trek is going to move into its next phase, and I would say that you know, this sort of discovery phase is going to probably start to really sundown here. I think we have a lot of opportunities to again sort of reinvent Star Trek one more time in the coming years, and maybe we have to go through a bit of a lull. But as we start seeing some of these stronger actors, like the ones in Reservation Dogs and so on, I think there's a lot of opportunity to entice, cultivate, and get leading characters, right? Like, you think about someone like Sinequa Martin-Green, right? She was phenomenal in The Walking Dead. Getting her was a really big get in terms of strong actors who could carry an entire series. So I think that's moving forward. I think you've got the right idea when you're pulling from shows like that.
Yeah, and to kind of pair with them a little bit, I guess, just kind of in the same vein, an actor who did appear in Star Trek that I really want to see come back actually showed up in season 4 of Star Trek Discovery in the role of Felix in the episode The Examples, Michael Grey Eyes from the Keuapel Valley in Saskatchewan. Incredible. Like, the character wasn't anything particularly like indigenous about the character other than the actor playing him, which that's great to see too. Like, people can just be people, right? And I really want to see him back in Star Trek because his brief turn in that episode was so strong and powerful. And another guy that I'd just love to see, I don't know, on the bridge of a starship at some point.
Full agreement. Awesome. Full agreement. Well, I'm sure we're missing millions of very talented actors from all different parts, right? I think drawing from stage actors, I think, would always be a really good idea as well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of emoting that can happen there. Thinking about actors who I was so satisfied to see into Star Trek, actually, and who I maybe kind of predicted if I think about it, was Idris Elba.
Mm-hmm.
Watching him earlier, I saw him in, what was it called? It was an English cop drama, and I'm forgetting the name of it. Luther was the name. Lufa, as he would have called himself. That was so good. And, you know, the way he kind of played this, like, tortured soul obviously lent itself very well to when he was in Star Trek Beyond. Yeah, I don't call him quite as well as you do. So here's hoping that some on your little wish list there managed to actually materialize.
That would be pretty cool. I'm also very excited, like, a lot of these cast announcements we've been getting in the last couple of weeks for Starfleet Academy. This crop of names of young people that I don't know, have never seen anything from. That's awesome. Like, mm-hmm. I want to see these young actors cut their teeth on Star Trek and just, like, become the next big thing, right?
100%.
Like, I think that's so cool. So, you know, as much as I want to see all of these seasoned, wonderful actors come and play in Star Trek, I think it's also, like you say, a place for stage actors and other maybe lesser known people to come and make their name a little bit. And that's kind of been a tradition with Star Trek, and I hope to see it continue for sure.
100%.
Well, we want to hear from everyone out there. Who are some actors that you would love to see in Star Trek? Who are some actors from Star Trek in the past that you would love to see come back? Let us know. PositivelyTrek@gmail.com. You can reach out to us there. You can also leave a comment on the show post on the Positively Trek discussion group for this episode. And all that's left is for me to say thank you so much to you for listening, and thank you to Barry, my co-host, for this wonderful discussion today.
It was a pleasure, sir. It was an absolute pleasure.
Awesome. And so thank you all one last time. And until next time, as always, stay positive. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.